This is Jedrick Wills, left tackle for the Cleveland Browns, and you're listening to the Browns Huddle Podcast. Enjoy the show.
And welcome to another episode of the Browns Huddle Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Hand. We are part of the Zedia Network. That's media spelled with a Z. For more information on the Zedia Network, you can find them on Twitter, at Zedia Network, or the web, www.zedianetwork.com. If you're a Cleveland Browns fan and have a related story about our Cleveland Browns and would like to share it, hit me up on Twitter. My DMs are open. You can find me there at Browns Huddle. You can also find this podcast on Twitter at Browns Huddle Pod. This week, we have a very special guest coming to the huddle, Chad Patterson at ChadP71. Chad, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Chad, it's good to have you, man. You are one of the great ones, in my opinion. We talked a little bit off air. You have an amazing ability to evaluate talent, in the free agency and the draft and just our overall roster for the Cleveland Browns. So I'm excited, man, to sit down with you and talk about some Browns offseason.
Yeah, me too, man. I'm really excited about this year. The Browns have definitely finally turned the corner this time, and it's real and it's long lasting. It's not just a quick fixed one season. They're actually building a foundation that I think is going to carry them for the next decade.
Oh, man, that's music to my ears, Chad. Before we get started too deep, we do have some news to talk about. The Cleveland Browns, we lost a great one. Marty Schottenheimer died at the age of 77. He was the Browns defensive coordinator from 1980 to 1984 and the Browns head coach from 1984 to 1988. Now, Chad, I was young back then. I was in my early teens. I do remember him very well. In fact, I mean, when you hear about the old Browns, you know, with Bernie Kosar and Webster Slaughter and Eric Metcalf, Mac Biner, Michael Dean Perry, Bob, all those great Browns and, you know, the AFC championship games, the drive and the fumble. This man was our head coach, and, you know, he will be missed. Do you have anything that you want to say? I mean, I know it was a long time ago he was our coach, but he was definitely one of the great Cleveland Browns coach in our history.
Yeah, I think what he was able to do was to – set a standard that the Browns will always want to achieve forever.
Yeah.
And being that it was only in the 80s versus the 40s or 50s, you know, it's now going to be able to be carried on that the Browns are a hard-nosed, we're going to wear you down, beat you up kind of football team. And that's what it was like when they played back there. I mean, from the football field all the way into the stands, you didn't go to a Cleveland Browns football game with an opposing team's jersey on and celebrate. That wasn't going to be tolerated back then. Now, I understand the times have changed everything, but it's still that love of hard-nosed AFC North football that everybody talks about. It started in Cleveland, and it started with his coaching and the way that he developed the team. And I think it's something that's going to carry on forever, that we're always going to want to be that way as a football team.
Yeah. I mean, no doubt about it. Back then, you're right. I mean, he built a culture here in Cleveland that we've spent the last two decades trying to get back to.
Exactly.
You know, his regular season record as a Browns head coach was 44-27. He had a playoff record of 2-4. Marty Schottenheimer, you know, he coached the Browns. Then he went on to Kansas City and coached them. I think he had 108 wins to 58 losses. I mean, just a tremendous job. I mean, He coached Joe Montana, you know, I think was his first quarterback. They brought Joe Montana from the 49ers. And then of course he went on to the Chargers and coached Drew Brees when he was there, and Phillip Rivers and Tomlinson. He had a tremendous record as a head coach. He never got to the Super Bowl. That's one thing that he never did. I will share a story. I live in Virginia, and back in 2011, a lot of people don't know this, but there was a football league called the UFL. Do you remember that? It was only a couple of years.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I do.
Do you remember the UFL?
Yeah, I had a couple football cards from them.
So it was called the Virginia Destroyers, and they hired Marty Schottenheimer back in 2011 as their head coach and general manager. And that was really cool. And the one and only year that he coached, after that year, the league folded and everybody lost their job. But he coached the Virginia Destroyers to the championship and won it. So that was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, he just loved to coach. He was a great guy. I've heard so many interviews on the radio today, and nobody's had a bad word to say about him. So I wanted to spend this time, the first part of the podcast, just to talk about Marty Schottenheimer and the Cleveland Browns. And like you said, Chad, he built a culture here, and we're getting that culture back in Cleveland finally after decades of trying to do so. Well, let's move into the Super Bowl recap. We just had the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They win Super Bowl, was it 55? Super Bowl 55 with a score of 31-9. What were your takeaways from that game? Because I'll be honest with you, Chad, when I look at these teams, when I look at the Kansas City Chiefs and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I'm automatically thinking, what does our team, the Cleveland Browns, have to do to beat them? But what were your initial thoughts on the Super Bowl that we just saw a couple days ago?
Okay, well, first I got to start off with it this way. There's three defensive coordinators ever that are what I consider elite, that I love more than any of the other coaches ever. Buddy Ryan. I can't believe I just said that. Buddy Ryan, Greg Williams, and Todd Bowles. I am a huge Todd Bowles fan. So I didn't care about who would wins or loses that game because I'm a Todd Bowles fan. I watched that game to watch his defense. And the reason why is because I wanted to watch how he played against Mahomes. And how could that translate to the Browns? Because everything I look at is, how does it translate to the Browns, like you said?
Sure.
And the man is just a phenomenal defensive coordinator. Phenomenal. And what was really cool, and I don't know if you remember watching this on TV, but they would put circles around the secondary, mm-hmm. and show them flow. Did you see how perfectly they flowed?
It was a thing of beauty.
It was absolute beauty. Everybody's in the right spot. Everybody's playing their guy the right way. And the best part that I took away from the Super Bowl, because this is how weird I am, was when Patrick Mahomes would move out of the pocket, Todd Bowles would play him one up close tight to try to get the tackle and one a few yards back. Now, if you go watch other teams, you'll have multiple players try to tackle Mahomes at the exact same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he just jukes him out. And he's got this move that absolutely irritates the hell out of me, is where he'll fake like he's going to run out of bounds, so they lay off, and he gets another 6 yards out of it because they don't want to hit him because they'll get the penalty. You know, well, he was giving himself up. No, he wasn't. He was faking him out. But anyway, so what Todd Bowles did was, the way he would do it is, the first guy would attack, the second guy would stay about 3 yards back. If that tackle's missed, he's right there to make it. So there wasn't him juking two guys and getting another 15 yards. He would literally have to break two tackles, and it's a lot harder to do. And I was just so impressed. And I posted it on there that Todd Bowles set the blueprint. This is how you beat the Chiefs. This is what you need to beat the Chiefs. Now, can the Chiefs adjust? And I don't think they can. I think other teams are going to take from what Todd Bowles showed them on how to play the Chiefs, and I think it's going to be a lot harder for them next year.
I heard a statistic that Patrick Mahomes rushed for 497 yeah. yards behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. That's insane, isn't it?
it's incredible that they were able to do that. I mean, how are they able to take all the weapons away? I mean, you have the Tyreek Hill, the Travis Kelce, you know, Sammy. How did they do that?
I think getting hands on and playing physical football with them. And yeah. from what I've also read after was that nobody gave Tampa Bay's defense a chance in this game. And they were offended by that, as they should be. You're paid to play football. And you're in the NFL, you're the top 1%. And when somebody says, you know, they don't stand a chance, I would be offended. I'm part of the 1%. I do have a chance. You know, I made it to the Super Bowl. And them guys just played lights out. And Devin White was absolutely phenomenal. He was everywhere.
Everywhere. And
which really hurt me because I wanted Devin White so bad it wasn't even funny. So, but once again, I just think that the way they played Mahomes, that they didn't over pursue him. Did you notice that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't blitz a whole lot that game, did they?
No, and when they did go in, they didn't go in hell bent for leather and miss the tackle. They played him smart, and they had somebody to back him up. So it wasn't like he could just, okay, I beat two guys. They're laying on the ground. Now I don't have nobody in front of me. It was never like that for him. He was always somebody in front of him. And those guys were getting off blocks, and, oh, man, it was phenomenal.
And he had nowhere to go with the football. That was what was really impressive, because usually Patrick Mahomes can scramble around back there and give his receivers some time, and he's going to find somebody open. That just wasn't happening, you know, for the Super Bowl.
They played it perfect. They played it absolutely perfect. And that's what every team in the AFC needs to strive to be able to stop the Chiefs. And not only does that translate into the Chiefs, it translates into the Ravens, which is most important for the Browns. So I look for, hopefully, which I think they will. I mean, these guys are smart when it comes to studying film and everything. I look for Woods to really get some key pointers from that game.
I think you're right. That's the blueprint, you know, of how you stay competitive and beat the Kansas City Chiefs, which was very good to see. I mean, the idea that you can hold the greatest offense in the league to no touchdowns. I mean, yeah, none. That's incredible. It really is. It's incredible. I thought this a couple of times during the game, you know, man, 3 weeks ago, we were so close to beating this team. So close.
We did. We would have beat them. We would have beat them if they had called that on Higgins. So I think it was Higgins. But anyways, yes, if they would have called the helmet.
Oh, you're talking about Dirty Dan?
Yes, that was that should have been called. I mean, the NFL has made it a point about head injuries, and then they don't call that. And then they even brag about it and call him Dirty Dan. I mean, that's absolutely repulsive, but yeah, it is what it is.
It is what it is. the Super Bowl was special, not because of it wasn't competitive. You know, when you look at the score, the game was over pretty early. I mean, I think at halftime it was 21-6. And then before you know it, it's, you know, how the game ended, 31-9. I mean, it was just over pretty much in the third quarter. It was done. But it was special because we had two legend quarterbacks, you know, Tom Brady, that is a legend, and legend in the making, Patrick Mahomes. Brady just got his seventh Super Bowl ring. He's been to 10. Do you ever think, you know, as long as we're walking on this planet, that we'll ever see another quarterback like that?
No, never. No, the game's going to change constantly. I've always felt that the game changes every 5 years. And I just, with salary cap and everything like that, it's going to be hard for a lot of these guys. Won't take the pay cut like Tom did to have the team around him. They just won't do it. And I don't blame them. I mean, you're only here for a short time. Make as much as you can and get out. And his commitment to his body, to the game, the right coaching staff around him and everything, it's going to be near impossible for anybody to ever achieve that, in my opinion.
It's just incredible. When you say it, it's still not believable.
Right.
I mean, 10 Super Bowls and he won 7 of them. It's incredible. You know, and this year Brady went through Heinicke, you know, Taylor Heinicke, which was probably his toughest matchup in the wild card round. And then he goes through Breeze, Rodgers, and Mahomes to win a Super Bowl. It's just an incredible story. Growing up, it was Joe Montana. He was the GOAT.
Oh, I remember.
But, you know, I don't know when it happened, but Tom Brady, he took that. He's the GOAT, man. Undisputed. Yeah,
maybe it will happen again. I just don't think it's – I just don't see teams being able to be built in a way to help the quarterback achieve that long term. So, I mean, not that much. That's, you know, I don't think Mahomes is a bad quarterback at all. I think he's a great quarterback. And he may get – 2 or 3 Super Bowls in his career, but 10 times of making the Super Bowl. I mean, when anything can happen too, you know, and I look for the NFL to slowly develop in, you know, better play, officiating is going to take place at certain times. You're not going to get away, because let's be honest, Brady gets away with some stuff that other quarterbacks don't get away with, and he's earned that. But there's going to be a time where that ends, and it's going to be difficult. You're starting to see offensive linemen make more money. That's going to be a lot more challenging. It's keeping your offensive line together, and it's going to be very difficult for another quarterback to do what he's done. He's just the right quarterback, the right team, the right era. Everything just worked for him. And man, getting out of New England and getting all those weapons.
I was rooting for Brady. I really was. You know, my mindset was I think that the Browns fans were not going to like Mahomes for the next decade. So let's go ahead and start that early. Let's start it right now. I don't like the Chiefs, man. I respect Patrick Mahomes and what he's done, but he's going to be our competition. So.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I don't like any other team in the AFC.
That's right. Speaking of Patrick Mahomes, here's the other side of it too, Chad, is I think we're going to see a highly motivated Patrick Mahomes. He just had surgery on his toe today. He had turf toe and he had surgery, and that's going to take a couple months to heal. But do you think that's going to be problems for the Browns next year? I mean, because Patrick Mahomes, I think that Super Bowl left a bad taste in his mouth.
Yes, I do think that Patrick Mahomes is going to be a problem for every team in the AFC. There's no, or and NFC. But what it's going to come down to is, can the Browns build a defense to contain them enough that our offense, because our offense is going to be explosive next year. I think we'll be able to score with any team in the NFL. So I had said this before too. I don't think the Browns need to have a top 5, top 10 defense. What they have to have is somewhere around the 15 to 18 range where they can just keep the game competitive. If they can keep the game competitive, we're going to outscore anybody or score with anybody. And that's how you have to beat Mahomes, is that you've got to be aggressive. You can't give them any extra opportunities. And you've got to be able to have a few stops in the way, and while your offense doesn't stop. And I mean, that's what it's going to come down to, is just, can you get a couple stops to allow your offense to outscore them? And I know that highest, most points wins, but it's easier said than done sometimes.
Well, it's probably a good time that you know, for us to focus on our defense this offseason, because it's obvious what we're going to be doing. Let's switch gears to the Browns offseason. We saw Devin White and Lavonte David had a solid game. We already mentioned that. You know, Lavonte David had a, you know, as a 9-year veteran, he was drafted in the second round. Devin White, in only his second year, was drafted 5th overall. Why is it such an unpopular opinion that the Browns would consider they wouldn't consider drafting a linebacker high in this year's draft. Why is that? Why are people against that? And I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I thought it would be good that we talk about it.
Okay. I have no idea where that comes from. First of all, it's absolutely not possible to talk about what the Browns are going to do in the draft until after free agency or just signing their own players back, because you have no clue. And while they love to say draft best player available, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
If that was true, Quentin Nelson would have been the first pick in that year that he was up. There's never been an offensive lineman go into the draft more. He's going straight to the Hall of Fame than him. That's a true number one pick. He wasn't picked first.
Right.
Because teams, while they like to say you draft the best player of best player available, they don't. They draft the best player of need. Every team does it. You have to, otherwise your team can't get better. So if Andrew Berry does really well shoring up every other position on the defense in free agency, why would he not look at taking a linebacker at 26? That's the primo spot to take a linebacker.
Yeah, and that's my thought too. But, you know, I don't know how much you can believe on Twitter, but you do see people that say, oh, Berry, he doesn't value linebacker drafting him that high. And I'm like, yeah, but if we're at 26 and we didn't address that in free agency and a linebacker's there, why wouldn't you take him?
How do they know that? How long has he been a GM?
Yeah, this is first year.
One draft.
Yeah.
So how could you possibly know what Andrew Berry's thinking about any position when he's only had – and he came in late, and it was a mess, and he didn't have a lot of time. You're going to see a completely different program this year. They've got a full season. The coaching staff is not going to be brand new. They know what they have in their players on their roster. They know the systems that they want to implement, what works, what doesn't work. This is all stuff that you have to do in your first year. The Browns just somehow managed to make the playoffs. That's insane. For an entire – think about it. We always talk about Baker Mayfield's been in his third – fourth system, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is Myles Garrett. So is Denzel Ward. I mean, these guys are learning new systems every other year, just like the offense is. And so there's no way for Joe Woods, when he came in, to know what his football team looked like. It's impossible. It's his first year. It's a pandemic. They couldn't even have the regular training camp or anything. Now they have a foundation. They have a foundation of information. Thank God that we have what I've always said. Andrew Berry's the smartest man in football. I don't doubt that. Like, I didn't agree with everything that he did, but the man's the smartest man in football is from the way I look at it. He knows how to read information just like you and I do. And if we can see that, look, linebacker is a huge need for the team, he's going to address it either in free agency or in the draft. So what he's got to decide is at 26, where can I get my most value at a position? Can I get it in free agency? Can I get it in the draft? And right now it's kind of trending toward he'll be able to get it in the draft, get more value at linebacker in the draft than he would be in free agency. So I don't see why it wouldn't be on the table. I mean, so you're going to take a defensive end that's maybe a second round or a third round grade just because you don't want to take a linebacker who has a first round grade and should have been. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me.
See, in the way that you're explaining it makes perfect sense to me. You know,
right.
I mean, if the value's there and it's your pick and you see the player that's going to, you know, help your football team, you're going to take them. It's just right. That's just that simple.
Yeah. It's not that challenging. I mean, well, we can't take a linebacker because I don't really have any value for him. Well, how could you not? We play Lamar Jackson.
And especially the teams that we're going against, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Buffalo Bills, the Baltimore Ravens. To me, that's who we're preparing. We got to be competitive with those teams. You know, first, yeah, you got to be competitive in your division, which I think we are, and we're close to doing that already. But then you got to look at, okay, you know, let's look past that. You know, who do we have to beat to get to the next level? And it is the Patrick Mahomes, and it's the Buffalo Bills, and it's the Baltimore Ravens. We need linebacker help. I mean, it was very obvious in the Super Bowl that that helped the Buccaneers beat the Kansas City Chiefs tremendously.
Yes.
I mean, you said it. I mean, he was all over the field.
Yeah, and if you look at our current roster right now, the weakest position that we have is linebacker. Plain and simple. It's they're not, you know, when we go into the 2021 season, we're going to be looking at having at least six linebackers on the 53 man roster. That's kind of like the normal number. Mm-hmm. We have three right now. Mm-hmm. So, and he has to add linebackers. He's not going to add just guys to play special teams. He's going to need rotational guys too. Good rotational guys. So I think that depending on who falls to 26, I definitely think the linebacker is going to be in play. I think he's going to look in free agency too to see what he can find in a smart way. He's not going to sacrifice the team for 1 year.
Fixing our defense to get it to where, you know, we're competitive with these teams. Is that a 1 year process? I mean, is it possible to do that in one off season, or are we looking at 2 years to accomplish that?
No, I think it's possible in 1 year. I think the Browns are a couple players away from being able to fix it. When I did my breakdown of the defense, what I didn't post in that was the fact that every player that I talked about, I would watch lots of film on that one player to kind of make sure that I felt comfortable saying something, that I wasn't just, you know, taking a shot in the dark. I actually watched what he did and everything. The biggest problem that I felt, this is just my opinion, the biggest problem that I felt that the Browns defense had was a huge lack of communication. I think that Joe Woods was kind of learning and changing some things and trying to feel his way out and trying to design his defense in a way that it would play to the players that he had and not necessarily his system. Andrew Berry made a huge commitment to the offense the first year. I definitely could see him going to Joe Woods and Kevin Stefanski and sitting there and say, okay, what pieces do you need to have your defense the way you want it? Kind of the same way he did with Kevin Stefanski the first year with the offense. And if Kevin Stefanski's already said that he's committed to the coaching staff that he's got, okay, we can all agree that Kevin Stefanski's coach of the year, the one of the brightest coaches that the Browns have had forever. Isn't the most logical decision for him then to go to Joe Woods and say, look, I'm committed to you. And as part of being committed to you, I'm going to give you the resources that you need to build what your vision of this defense should look like. I mean, that's just logical, right?
Gosh. And it's like a parent telling their kid, you know, what do you want for Christmas? Like, that's what that meeting would be.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yes. And yes. But, and then, so you listen to what Joe would, and I'm speculating as to how this conversation would play out, but I would say that you would listen to what Joe Woods has to say and what he needs in a player. And then Andrew Berry takes that information. They have their meetings. And they find players that fit the standard that Joe Woods wants without looking at the long term for the team. Because Andrew Berry said in an interview, and I honest to God wished I would have recorded this, that he's kind of got like a 2 year plan every year. So it's like this, it's 2 years every year out. And that's where I think. So I would consider Andrew Berry the brakes and Joe Woods would be like the accelerator, and together they can race and without running the car off the track like we've had before, because we'd have two accelerators, you know, just go, and you can't do that. And I think this is going to be a great balance for this football team. So that's kind of where I'm coming in on that.
You're getting me excited, Chad. That's awesome, man. That's good stuff.
I'm excited. I am so excited.
Dude, I can't wait to see the product that they put on the field in 2021 on the defensive side of the ball. Because I think the offense, you'd pointed this out early, it's going to be pretty much the same besides a couple of players.
Right.
The defense is going to look totally different.
Yes, I agree with that completely. And I think it's going to be the true version of what Joe Woods wants the defense to be. And thankfully, the two key players for that, three, I guess I should say, Myles Garrett can play anywhere on the field because he is that good and that fast. Sheldon Richardson is the perfect tackle, which is a funny story. He started out as a defensive end and was forced to play tackle and would love to play defensive end again. He said that in an interview, just kind of a little funny. Yes. Yeah. And Denzel Ward, man-to-man corner. So you've got these three key pieces, and then so that's your foundation, and now Joe Woods can start building around it. That's where Grant Delpit comes in. Harrison comes in, which this is why I don't think Harrison is one of those players that AB is going to be very conscious about watching what he does with the contract, because he has to re-sign him. And you don't get multiple shots at getting a player like that. And when you do get a chance to get a player like that, you take care of him. And so I think they're going to watch, you know, be careful with that. So you've got a really good foundation. Now you just need to put I don't want to leave Taki out, because his growth from last year to this year has been phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. And I think, sorry, I'm getting off track here.
No, you're good. This is good stuff, Chad.
Taki, I did not want him when the Browns drafted him. And the reason why is he led all of college football in missed tackles. And I was like,
I could see why you didn't want him. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was why. And it wasn't because he's not a hard nosed freight train football player, because he is. And he would get to the ball right now and then he would just miss the tackle. And I didn't know that it would ever get fixed. But he went to special teams with Mike Prefer. And Mike Prefer developed him on special teams to an outstanding linebacker now. And that's what we as Browns fans have never got to watch, because it's either you come in and start right away or you're cut and then you go on to another team and they take off.
Player development, we haven't seen that. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Because they've never been able to stay committed to anybody that long because they needed starters day one. And I made a comment about another player that we passed on, and he didn't even hardly play this year. But having Taki to develop into what he is now has been just awesome to watch, and shows how important Mike Prefer is to this football team. And I hope they do the same thing with Mac Wilson this year. Stop moving on from these guys. Try to develop them. Run out their first contract, and let's see what we got. Because Mac has the potential to be great, and if he can get to the – if he can develop the same way as Taki, and I'm going to tell you what, I'm a huge Phillips fan, and he is fun and exciting, and I'm all screaming and yelling in my living room when I'm watching him play football, and man, we would have a really good, strong, you know, linebacker core then, and we're just talking about pieces. So that's kind of where I came out. Sorry, I kind of got off track there. I apologize.
That's okay. No, I mean, Mac Wilson's an interesting case. I mean, we see him on Twitter. We know he wants to be great. I don't doubt that he works hard. He just hasn't gotten it yet. That's not saying that he can't. And, you know, sometimes players, it's like a light bulb. It just flips on and then they get
right.
I am rooting for that guy. You know, is this going to be his third year coming up?
Yep.
Third year.
Yep.
So – yeah, he's one that I am rooting for. I'd love to see Mac Wilson, you know, start for our team.
But a funny story about him. Actually, the year he was drafted, I would have taken him way early. That's who I wanted at linebacker.
Uh-huh.
So I did miss. I thought he was going to be a lot better than he was, a lot quicker. But, I mean, how much do you kind of play into the fact, once again, he's not been in the same system? And the team was a mess before Kevin Stefanski came here.
And he was young when we drafted him. Young.
Yeah, he's 22 years old.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And so what I'm excited to see is that we have finally got the foundation built for this football team for everybody to grow from. And we've not had that yet. And I tell you, there's little things that happen. Kevin Stefanski winning coach of the year. Yes, that's great. But think about it as a young football player. Your coach just won coach of the year. Your respect level for him goes through the roof because he's now a proven coach in the NFL. There's no doubt that he's one of the top coaches in the NFL. He doesn't win that award unless he is. I mean, he beat out a lot of very good coaches. So as a young football player, and you see that, these are the little things the Browns have never had. They've never had that. They've had tight end coaches and offensive coordinators. They've never had a coach of the year. And I think when the season starts, these players go in and go, man, that is my coach. That's coach of the year. He knows what he's doing. I'm going to listen. And I think that's when the corner starts to turn for this football team. And it already has, but it's going to go even more now.
And what that does to young players that are drafted by the Cleveland Browns coming into a culture like that with coaches that they know they can look them in the eye and they know, okay, he's going to be here. He's going to help me develop in this league. And we're seeing free agents tweet on Twitter that they want to come to the Browns. They want to be a part of this mission because they see what's happening here. You're right, man. I mean, the coaching that we have, it's stability. It's stable. It's not the 2007 Cleveland Browns where we're just a blip, you know. This is going to be longevity and we're here to stay.
Right. Yep. And I think that's going to pay huge dividends this year. I look for a huge jump in growth from the entire football team. And like you said, and I'm going to guess you're kind of commenting about Richard Sherman.
My next question. Yeah.
Nope. Just real quick on that. You're a young defensive back in the NFL. You see that Richard Sherman saying, hey, look, you know, I would like to reunite with Joe Woods. That's Richard Sherman. Say whatever you want about it. His name carries weight in the NFL because he's earned the right to carry that weight. A young DB sees that, and they're like, well, if Richard Sherman wants to go play for Joe Woods, why wouldn't I want to go play for Joe Woods? These are the little things that the Browns need to finally build that long-term culture with the team, in my opinion.
I mean, yeah, you're right. Even if that never even if it doesn't happen, Richard Sherman doesn't come here, that news is out there. And you're right. Other guys are like, man, if Richard Sherman wants to come in, there must be something going on there, you know? So
exactly.
Well, let me ask you, that is my next question, Chad. Where do you see the Browns going after? I've heard Richard Sherman, JJ Watt. Love it, hate it. Where are you at with that?
Richard Sherman. I've kind of built what I felt was like some kind of a standard for the Browns of what I think AB is looking for. Once again, 2 years, under 30, reasonable contract, nothing that's going to take a massive investment. He's just not going to do that. I don't think. This is my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong, and I've put it out enough now that I'll get the flack if I am, but I don't think I am. I suggested that in the event, I start from this. Joe Woods, one thing that I feel like I've learned from watching all of this year's defense over and over and over and over again, Joe Woods has to trust his free safety with all he is. I think that's why Sindeo stayed out there, is because he trusted him to run his defense the way he wanted it. I think it's possible if the contract's right, Joe Woods trust Richard Sherman to come in, run his defense the way he wants it run, and help develop the guys under him, then I could see it as possible. Would I do it? No, I would not bring – I just don't think that they need to go that direction. But I would understand if it happened. So my suggestion was to try to move him to free safety and let him play free safety to help develop Delpit, because there's nobody that's going to give Delpit more information than he will on with Joe Woods' style of defense. So that's kind of where I thought. But once again, I wouldn't do it if I was him, but if it does happen, I could understand.
J.J. Watt, what about him? Do you like that idea? Not like no. it? No.
Yeah. Not at all. No. And there's multiple reasons why. First, he doesn't fit the scheme, and I've argued with people on Twitter about this consistently. Joe Woods likes to play his defensive ends in coverage. That J.J. Watt doesn't play coverage. He rushes the passer. J.J. Watt's sitting on a $17.5 million contract. If the Texans cut him, he's going to try to go to the Steelers. It's already out there. It's out there everywhere. His brother's saying that my brother wants to come play with us in Pittsburgh. He's wearing the Pittsburgh Steelers hat around the house. So if he gets cut, he's most likely going to take less money to go play with his brothers. Wouldn't you? Wouldn't any reasonable person? And it's not like the Steelers are a trash football team.
They both of his brothers are there, right?
Yes, both of his brothers are there.
Yeah.
So he's most likely going to go there. So now, okay, how do the Browns get J.J. Watt? Well, they've got a trade for him. The Texans are going to want top dollar trade for him. So it's going to take a decent trade round, third, second, something like that to get him. The Browns have about $30 million to work with. I mean, nobody actually knows because the real numbers haven't come out yet. It's kind of like guesstimating. So you're going to give up half your cap space and a high draft pick to get him for a one-year rental. And he doesn't fit the system because he doesn't play in coverage. That doesn't make any sense. It's not logical. I mean, yes, can he get pressure on the quarterback? Yeah, he can. Is J.J. Watt a good football player? Yeah, he's great. But it also depends on what year you're talking about, because he doesn't have consistent years. I mean, he'll play 300 snaps, 500 snaps, 1,000 snaps, 200 snaps, 1,000 snaps. You don't know what you're going to get. He's over 30. He's going to cost you half your cap and draft picks, and he doesn't fit the system. Why would the Browns do that? I for the life of me, can't understand it. Once again, it's nothing against J.J. Watt. He's a great football player, and whatever team he goes to will surely be happy to have him. But I think the Browns can find an alternative that fits the system and will be at a price point that doesn't destroy the cap with all the other decisions that they have to make in the different positions.
I think it's the name. You know, we're on Browns Twitter, and whenever a big name, you know, is up for possible trade rumors or a free agent, you always see those names going through Browns Twitter, and it's just a fan thing. I mean, the idea of going after a J.J. Watt, if you just look at his name and his history, it's like, yeah, but I hear what you're saying. Of the two, Richard Sherman would be the guy, you know, if I had to pick, that would definitely be the guy that I would go for if I had to make a choice between the two.
Yeah, if I was making a choice between the two, that would definitely be. Because Richard Sherman, once again, can be a teacher. And that is important to a young football team.
And I think he would take a discount. I think you said that earlier. You're right on that. He would take a discount.
Yeah, he's gonna play.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, if he's going to play around the $6, $7 million mark, it's not going to destroy the cap, gives him room and flexibility, and gives him another coach out on the field and on the sidelines. That these young kids are going to be – think about this, man. You're a young kid that just got drafted by the Cleveland Browns, and you've got Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry, and Richard Sherman standing next to you on the sideline? I mean, just – can you imagine what that would feel like to be a young kid coming out of college? And I would be in awe. And you know those guys have the knowledge to help you be a better football player. So whenever I look at these things, I try to look at the entire picture, not just one little aspect. So, yes, having Richard Sherman on the sidelines, as long as everybody gets along, which I think they will because everybody wants to win a Super Bowl, I think could help develop the younger guys coming in.
We'll probably get into this in the next segment, but I definitely do believe that, you know, when you talk about building the Browns defense into to what you want it to be, it's going to take us bringing in a veteran or two. Maybe he is, you know, the wrong side of 30s, but he fits in the Joe Woods system. I think it's going to be important to bring in one or two of those guys, and maybe one of those guys is Richard Sherman. But I right. think it's going to take us bringing in one or two of those guys to set the example, get guys in the right place, understands the Joe Woods scheme, you know, and system. So that's where I'm at with that.
Yeah, and then another player that I feel like fits that system, and I've said this before, was B.J. Goodson. I honestly believe the Browns should bring him back. I think they need to bring him back. I think it's important for Jacob Phillips to have B.J. there to help him develop in a system that Goodson knows and ran well. I mean, Goodson ended up with a PFF rank of 22nd in the NFL and didn't cost the Browns a ton of money. You know, and because the goal right now, and then, once again, just my opinion, the goal right now is to develop Jacob Phillips. You have to develop this young man. He's got so much talent, and while he didn't blow up this year, I mean, the potential's there. So you got a guy who ran the defense. He understands what Joe Woods wants. He's not going to cost you a ton of money. He's productive on the field. Why would you not want him back to help continue that development? And if he doesn't play and his rotation becomes less and less and less, that's fine, because B.J. Goodson is the kind who can come in late in the year if he has to and not miss a beat. And I know I've got a little bit of pushback on that, and they're like, well, they could do better. Yeah, they might be able to find a more productive player, but does that player know Joe Woods' defense? Will he be able to mentor Phillips and grow him into that Mike position? Because that's kind of the way it looked like it was going. And I hope it does, because, man, I'm a little bit biased here because I really like Phillips. That's where I had said that in another post, whereas they don't always have to have the best player. They have to have the right player.
It's good, solid points, Chad. All right, your pinned tweet on Twitter, listeners, follow Chad, it's ChadP71 on Twitter. Your pinned tweet, breaking down the Browns defense. Chad, I love the way you designed this tweet, and I've seen you design other tweets like this. And you basically, you titled this Breaking Down the Browns Defense, and you put your thoughts in the replies. And as a reader, I can go through that, and it kind of creates a story as to what you're thinking. And I can put my thoughts in there too, and I can kind of see what you're thinking. So I don't know if you saw that somewhere else or you developed that yourself, but listeners, if you get a chance, go look at Chad's pinned tweet. We're actually going to talk about it a little bit right now. What are your thoughts on, as we get into that tweet, with improving the Browns defense? Your initial thoughts.
My initial thoughts when I watched it was that Olivier Vernon was a lot more important to this defense than I originally thought. He was perfect for the defense. Next up, they have got to get more pass rushers with four guys. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. That's for Joe Woods' defense to work. Pass rush with four guys is the most important thing they could do. Next up was they've got to get a better nickel corner. They were getting a beat pretty bad from Kevin Johnson on the nickel or the slot, whichever way you want to call it. And lastly, they need a leader at free safety. That's why kind of when I broke it down, if I was in charge of trying to fix the defense, my number one goal would be find a veteran free safety to help take the pressure off Delpit. Don't force him to be the starter day one. Allow him to grow coming off that injury. Have somebody that Joe Woods can trust to run his defense. Once again, I think that's the most important thing for Joe Woods, is to trust the free safety. Let him be the leader of the secondary. Next up, Sean is a guy I talked to on here. I'm really worried that Ogunjobi is going to be priced out of the Browns market. And it kind of comes down to you've got Andrew Billings, you've got Ogunjobi. There's no need to keep both of them. You're going to keep four defensive tackles on the roster on the 53. It's been that way for a long time. The way you kind of want to do that is two veterans, two rookies, two guys to develop. Jordan Elliott is going to be the next guy coming up of the way I see it. So you're going to have to make a decision there, and you're going to have to get a defensive tackle that can either in the draft or the agency that can help put the pressure on. So that's kind of where I started it off at.
And we just signed Billings last year. Obviously he opted out for because of COVID. So his contract told, so this will really be his first year as a Cleveland Brown. Is that right?
Yes, this will be his first year. So the way they did it was, is if I understand it correctly, he basically made $200,000 last year to not play football. He was not allowed to have communication with the football team. So he doesn't there. So I know I kind of wondered if they would like, wow, he could spend the whole year learning the defense, come in fresh, right? Well, apparently that's not going to be the case. He's going to be starting from ground zero, and he has a 1 year deal. So I actually did a comparison of Billings versus Ogunjobi and to kind of see where we're at. His contract's reasonable, won't hurt the football team, veteran, maybe ideal, and allow the Browns a little bit of options there if they just go ahead and run with him. So that's kind of where they're at. Billings, Richardson, and Elliott are going to be your three main guys, and then they're going to look to add one more, I'm going to guess.
You pointed out in this tweet, in the thread, the Browns struggled to get off the field on third and fourth down.
Yes.
How do we improve that? Because you're right. I mean, that was a frustration as a fan. They would do a pretty good job on first, second down, and then on third down, they couldn't hold them. And obviously we saw on third and 14 against the Chiefs, you know, Chad Henne rushed and almost had a first down that ultimately ended our season. How do we fix that, man? How do we get off the field on third and fourth down?
I found this really interesting that it was a comment made, I believe by Andrew Berry, that the Browns needed to improve on third down. So it kind of went and looked at all the teams in the NFL and everything. And it turned out that the Miami Dolphins are actually the best third down defense in the NFL. And I was like, okay, so what makes the Dolphins better? And I matched up their rosters. The Dolphins don't have a better defensive roster than the Cleveland Browns.
Hmm.
So that's when I really started looking at everything. And what you kind of see, if you go back and watch them play, and for anybody that kind of really wants to get an all-in-one of the Browns defense, go back and watch week 12 versus Jacksonville. To me, that game is later in the season against an offense that they should have dominated, and they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of start to see why. The number one factor for me was lack of communication. Guys would let guys go, and the next guy wouldn't pick him up. Guys would run into each other. Guys would be out of position. And Kevin Johnson, and I'm not picking on him, didn't play well enough in the slot to take away the quick, you know, slants and stuff like this. And holes were not getting filled on the front four where runs could get through and get those extra yards that they shouldn't have. The most important stat in football, in my opinion, for a defense is yards after the catch, yards after the run, or after the carry, however you want to say it. If those are large numbers, you're not stopping anybody. If those numbers are short, then, yeah, they might get a play that's 9 yards, but they're not getting 10 yards, 12 yards, 15 yards, 20 yards. They're getting 9. And the Browns had a real hard time with that, was making that the initial burst it. So that's kind of how I related to, I think they've got to have a stronger, more solid, equal pass rush up front. No holes. Each guy working together. They've got to take away the tight end or the third wide receiver or the dump down back. And then next, when you get into the free safety, which was the 4th and 15 against the Ravens. Zendejo literally ran the wrong way and took out another player, leaving Hollywood Brown wide open. Play should have never happened.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And so I think that's how I, through this whole process of going through it and looking at numbers and everything, that's where I ended up at, is that those positions are the ones that I feel point. And then they need a will linebacker, a solid coverage, can do it all, will linebacker that they can trust to be in the right position every time.
So that, so your first question on this tweet thread was, is it coaching or lack of talent? From what I'm hearing from you, it's definitely on the lack of talent side.
Yes. And I think Joe Woods could have done a little more. I don't think he's a completely off the hook. And once again, this is just my opinion. I'm not trying to start a war with Joe Woods or anybody else for that. But this is what I seen, that Joe Woods did the absolute best he could with what he was given during a global pandemic as a first year DC for the Cleveland Browns. And there's things that Joe Woods could have done better. And I bet you Joe Woods would say there are things that I could have done better. But he also didn't have his players to run his defense. And I really started noticing that as I progressed through. So it's kind of like, okay, Kevin Stefanski, here's your offense, but we're not going to give you Jack Conklin. We're not going to give you Austin Hooper. We're not going to give you Wyatt Teller. We're going to give you the old Browns offensive line with no tackles and no running game. And how well are you going to do then, right?
Right.
So in all fairness, I think that's what I ended up coming up with, is that Joe Woods needs to have players that he trusts. He needs to trust his free safety more than anything in the world, and let him build the defense the way he needs to build it for his style.
Baker Mayfield, where are you at on Mayfield? Do we sign him to a fifth-year option or just go all in and sign him to a long-term deal?
Go all in and sign him to a long-term deal. And here's why. Technically, it's normal to take the fifth-year option. I mean, it's not that Andrew Luck took the fifth-year option. So it's not out of the normal. Nobody should think anything if the Browns decide to go that route. But the Browns have been such a disjointed team for so long that I believe now's the perfect time to set the foundation. And you do that by giving Baker a long-term deal, if you believe it. But this is, and everybody knows that follows me that I'm biased. I'm a huge Baker Mayfield fan, but I can take my Baker Mayfield hat off to have this conversation right now. If I'm Andrew Berry, okay, I'm not a Baker Mayfield fan. I'm not a fan of anybody, because that's not what's important. What's important is building a winning franchise to win the Super Bowl. So you can't be a fan and build a winning franchise. You have to be open-minded, right? So if I 100% believe Baker Mayfield is going to be the future, I sign him to a long-term deal. If I have reservations, I move on. And the reason why is you've got to show this football team that you are all on the same page. And unfortunately, while the team and everybody else might say, we don't let the outside noise get into our building, they're wrong. It does get into the building. These players are on Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, TikTok. They hear what these people are saying. I mean, I'll use this as a great example. We don't let the outside noise get into our building. You don't? Did you have a play called Maserati? Isn't that outside noise that got into the building?
Right.
So you do let it get into the building. Everybody does. We're all human beings.
It's impossible. But yeah.
It's impossible not to. So if I'm Andrew Berry, I believe in Baker Mayfield. I believe he's my quarterback. I'm going to give him a long-term deal as soon as I can and shut down all the chatter. It's over, done with. The team knows that Baker Mayfield's the quarterback. That's it. That's how I would handle the situation. If I didn't, I'd move on. And what,
last question, and then we'll get into the mailbag. Rashard Higgins, do you sign him, bring him back, or do you let him test free agency, let him walk? What do you do with Rashard Higgins?
No, I do not let him test free agency. Here's why. Just with Baker Mayfield, Rashard Higgins is a very important part of this football team. He is a foundational player. And the team, to once again, we're trying to change the culture here. So by saying, look, Rashad bet on himself this year, and I posted that in a tweet. He took less money to stay here. He didn't cry and whine and complain, and he sat the bench, and he was ready to play fourth string, fifth string wide receiver if need be. He was going to bet on himself. He earned the right to be paid as part of the Cleveland Browns. Now, imagine yourself, you're on the football team, and you see Rashard Higgins do what he's done. Bet on himself, stay committed to the Cleveland Browns, and the team doesn't take care of him. What kind of message does that send?
Well, I mean, with the way the salary cap is, and, you know, it's hard to sign everybody. We've got a lot of money tied up in our offensive line, our receivers. I mean, you know, OBJ and Jarvis Landry, I think they're going to make somewhere around $30 million this year.
Yep.
Sometimes it's just the economics of it that it's just impossible to bring back everybody. So
I agree. I do agree with you, but I think they could structure the deal in a way that it wouldn't be harmful to the overall cap number. There are ways of getting around the cap number. Now, if Rashard Higgins wants $15 million a year, it's not going to happen. I mean, we got to be real. We got to be realistic, you know, but I don't think he does. I think he wants to stay in Cleveland at a reasonable price. I think, and he's earned the right. Now, once again, if he wants 15, no, that's not going to happen. And everybody on the football team would understand that. But if he's coming to the team and to all of his teammates and saying, look, I just want a reasonable deal to be the number three wide receiver, and the Browns just say, good, that's free agency, I think it sends a bad message. Just once again, just my opinion.
Yeah.
How I feel about it. But I think they could do a deal with him.
I would love to bring him back. It's just a question, can we afford him? That's the only thing. He's a fan favorite, man. Everybody loves Hollywood Higgins. The economics of it would be the hard part, but
right.
We'll have to see on that. Let's get into the Browns Huddle mailbag. I have just two questions and we'll let you out of here. We're kind of up against it. At David A. Retiree asks, what do you think the first need to be addressed this offseason is? The first need, the first move, and I guess we're talking about free agency. What do you think that would be?
Free safety.
Okay.
That's the number one position. It's really interesting that Jeremy Flowers from ESPN came out today and said the Browns are interested in Harris from the Vikings. Anthony Harris? Yes. So – depending on what his contract number is, that's a logical move. You know, once again, Delpit is the future. Nobody should mistake that. Delpit is the future free safety of this football team. What the Browns can do is supplement that to not have the pressure on him with a veteran Joe Woods can trust. This, once again, back to my opinion, he needs to trust his free safety, give Delpit time. If you can get somebody like that, I know who I would like. I would like Marcus May from the Jets. I would do everything in my power to sign him. That would be my top and number one priority. It's what this football team needs. But I can understand Harris as well. So that's what I think it is, free safety.
And you'd mentioned earlier with Richard Sherman, you know, maybe he would be move to free safety.
Yes, right. That's quite possible. I don't know how Richard Sherman feels about that, but that was a way that I felt he could be both. And I know people are like, he's not fast enough. You don't have to be fast enough if you're in the right
spot. He's a ball hawk, man.
Yeah, once again, you don't have to be the fastest guy on the field if you're always in the right spot.
That's right.
That's just something that I felt would work. And you're starting to see corners do that. They're willing to move to free safety to play a couple more years.
Yeah.
I mean, well, why not if you're going to get paid, right?
Hey, you hear players say that all the time. Hey, put me anywhere, wherever the coaches need me, I'm there. Yeah. You know, so yeah, I think it's definitely possible that he would move to free safety. So, all right. Second question. He's a friend of the show. He's been a guest. Awesome guy. I don't know if you follow him, but at KC_Kinneman asks, this is a fun question, Chad. If you could poach one player off of each of our rivals' rosters, Steelers, Ravens, Bengals, who would you take?
Ooh.
Start with the Bengals.
Start with the Bengals. Chad Lawson.
Chad Lawson.
Yeah, but he's actually going to be a free agent. So,
you could poach him then.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, man. The Bengals, that's a hard one.
That is actually a tough one.
Yeah, that is.
I mean, when you think of the Bengals, you think of Joe Burrow. We're good there. We don't need him. Joe Mixon, yeah. We're good there. What about T. Higgins?
That would be great. But if you take T. Higgins, you no longer need Hollywood Higgins.
But he's on a rookie deal, so.
Yes, but I definitely that would not be a bad move. For fun, yes. T. Higgins.
Okay. What about the Ravens? Who would you poach off the Ravens if you could just pick one?
Mark Andrews.
Oh.
Baker Mayfield's favorite target in college. It would be Mark Andrews. I would take him in a heartbeat.
Get them reunited?
Yes. Yep. It would be awesome with Mark Andrews and Austin Hooper.
That'd be sick, wouldn't it?
Yes, that would be sick.
His contract up? I think he's there for a while. I don't think they're gonna.
Yeah,
let him
he's
go.
There. Yeah, they're not letting him go nowhere. They're gonna stay all over him.
Oh, good question, Casey. All right, Steelers. That's... Who would you poach off the Steelers?
It's kind of tough, man. Minkah Fitzpatrick or Cameron Sutton. The Browns could use both of them.
Those are two good choices.
Yeah,
I've always liked Cam Hayward. I've always liked him.
Yeah,
I think he'd be good. Or T.J. Watt.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, T.J. Watt would be the ideal player to take, and that's probably who I should have picked. But I just keep thinking that our secondary needs so much help. If I got a chance to nail some guys that I know are going to be highly productive, I would have to take that because we could always draft a defensive end.
Hey, and based on our previous conversation, if we poach T.J. Watt, then J.J. Watt would probably come. So we get two of the Watt brothers.
That there you go, and Miles Garrett could watch from the bench.
Right? Oh no, no!
That was a joke. That
good,
was a
good
joke.
Question, Casey. That's awesome.
That
man.
was an awesome question. I like that.
Well, Chad, this was a lot of fun. I had a great time with you in the huddle today. I would love to do this again. I know you're a busy guy, but I really, man, you're a fun follow on Twitter. And when you tweet, dude, I look at it. I really do. I value what you say, and you just don't put out smoke. I mean, when you speak, it's, you know, pay attention to it. If you're not following Chad, you can follow him on Twitter at Chad P. 71. Is that right? Chad
P. 71. Chad P. 71.
Well, anywhere else we can give you a follow? Where can listeners follow you on social media? Is it just Twitter or what else you got going on?
I've got an Instagram account. I don't really use it. It's pretty much just Twitter, man. For right now, there's things in the future that hopefully are going to pan out. But as of right now, it's just pretty much Twitter. I just kind of that's where I focus most of my energy at. So.
You know what I like the most what you do are those graphs. And I'll be honest with you, sometimes I'm looking at them like, man, what am I looking at? There's so much knowledge in there. But
I get carried away.
Oh, dude. It's like, what's that? A Beautiful Mind. You ever see that movie? Beautiful.
I greatly appreciate that.
Well, this was fun, man. Let's do this again soon.
Yes, I definitely, man. This was a good time. I appreciate it. And I love the questions, too. That's the first time I've done that part of it, and that was awesome.
No doubt. Well, if you think about it, shoot me your address, DM me your address. I send all my, I don't know if you could see that. I send all my guests a Browns Huddle podcast koozie.
Awesome. Yes, I will.
They're made right here, man. We make them homemade, and we'll get that sent out to you.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on. That was a lot of fun, buddy.
Absolutely. Let's do this again soon, bud.
All right, man.